So I'm going to read a section of a lyric suite called Red. And Red has an epigraph by the French poet Paul Verlaine, who says, "As for me, I live my life in red." It's probably obvious to say that, I was thinking about red, and whenever we're in the realm of red, we're in the realm of the most primal human behavior. So I guess it's no mistake then that poets tend to write about red often. Red doesn't bother the children. They embrace its sex. These ghost soldiers march in rows after the chilled and grueling hours of midnight and hoarfrost, the frostbite. Auditioning for the march of the wood soldiers to sweep the bodies off the roads, to man the manholes and their explosives, to relinquish the shrapnel from the earth, to then replenish it. How many days has red manifested in panic, in pills that spark spells, hallucinations of green porpoises and antelopes gnawing at stars? Would you fill my ear again with cyanide, madam? Villages drenched in a thousand locusts, I have told you solemnly, God said, but red was fruitful and it multiplied. And so we have Ford factories and assembly lines where bolts flow into copper swamps, where traffic jams quiver and collect tires for fire eaters with silver tongues. Color of night sky, where are you looking? Color of anus, red. Birds will forever live in red and never redeem themselves. There's no need to. They lie awake in their nests, creating, forgetting, creating, wooling their graves, posing, mostly keeping the sky free of uranium. Such a pleasure to view the world through binoculars. Look at all the birds with bits of red. Cardinals, wattle birds, summer tanagers, bohemian waxwings, barn swallows, rufous hummingbirds, and the Memphis Redbirds, baseball team, by the way, and bird. Birds and their bits of red are endless. They walk wearing petticoats while sipping tea, oolong and lapsang souchong. Hat pins hold their hats in place. Corsets contain their porcelain frames. They promenade arrested by geese, 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 flying everywhere in flocks, skidding fast on the face of the lake water. People as delicate as butterflies, hand sewn. A pastoral as bright as the facades of banks. Trees, bushes, cattails sink into the foreground. Meanwhile, birders wearing wire-rimmed spectacles fix their eyes on the singular sight of the red-winged blackbird taking flight. Transmission towers flash red, sky interrupted by lightning, by fighter jets, the puffed cheeks of the blowfish, wheelbarrows and Lay's potato chips, stacks of plastic coins at Sunday poker. In the hooked spines of the burdock, a red bird becomes entangled. A landmine excises a leg. The perimeter shushes. Gooseberries sit plump in the thorny bush. Red of long-throated poppies, red slippers for the weavers outside their doors, bangles clinking against each other on the wrists of the women at the market. Herd of mountain goats slices the river's ruddy current while greedy honeybees honeymoon in the blood blossom. Thou art happiest in red, red music of lies and phantoms. In the red twilight of a quiet house, stars nailed to an evening sky, red ramp of dreams. Beyond the profundities of water, red nest of stars. A nest is a lamp lit with red. A bat flapped from an old eyelid into pools of red earth, yes, even the brain of the pomegranate. And I'm going to read, the last poem I'm going to read is called Starry Heavens. Starry Heavens comes from a thought from Immanuel Kant, and it goes like this. Two things fill the mind with ever new and increasing admiration and awe, the oftener and more steadily we reflect on them, the starry heavens above and the moral law within. And I guess the only other thing I want to say about Starry Heavens is that it invokes the, well, it names Demeter and Persephone. And I'm sure all of you know the story of Demeter and Persephone, the goddesses of the seasons. But I just want to remind you very quickly of the story. So the great myth that the Greeks passed on to us goes like this, that in the beginning there was no separation of seasons, just never-ending good crops. And Persephone, who is Demeter's daughter, was, I don't know, out in the pasture one day or outside, and as the story goes, Hades came and abducted Persephone, Demeter's daughter, and brought her into the underworld. And Demeter was just totally forlorn. She turned all the fields fallow and ran the rivers dry. And it said that she refused to nourish the earth, and while she wandered around looking for Persephone, she denied herself food, drink, or comfort, and she cried tears of ice. So because she refused to nourish the earth, someone had to do something about it. So Zeus comes in, and he wants to try to negotiate with Hades for Persephone's return. But legend said that if you eat anything in the underworld, you can't leave it. And when Persephone was in the underworld, she eats three pips of the pomegranate. And so they have to come to a deal. And so the deal is that Persephone can spend 2/3 of the year with her mother and 1/3 of the year in the underworld as queen of the underworld and Hades' wife. And that's how we come to conceive of winter, according to that myth. That was a long condensed version, but there you go. So that myth really resonates with me, and I was thinking about it. I always think about Demeter and Persephone when winter comes. And I remember reading the myth with my daughter, Rory, who's going to be 10, and her only question was, she looked up at me and she said, Mom, if I ever went away or someone took me, would you wander the world and cry tears of ice? Here this is, Starry Heavens. For this dream, we need binoculars. This sea is fallow and feral. This strange wave we are now so universally swept up in is called chance. It draws us in, draws us out, and under the sea. Griffins peer at us with gold eyes, and mermaids think deeply of the common good. Through the eyepiece, we spot a horse with wheat in her teeth. Today, this means all action is mercenary. On land, in sky, the crows fly in murders to rest on the spines of sycamores. Gray daylight flattens every landscape, and the crows cry tears of ice. This is Demeter's bone hand, so shake it. Her touch could mean famine or feast. People call her winter because they carry such heavy heads. Often the diagnosis is vertigo or impotence. Philosophers dip their ducats in wine and stain their teeth. Teeth, what would language do without you? What of speech? We came home from the ocean and went to sleep. We felt compelled to take our clothes off and languish quiet as felines. This weather devils us, midwinter. So we look up at the clouds to curse, the stars to name them, to genuflect. For this dream we need binoculars. Look, Persephone's finger lights the stars one by one. Thank you very much, everyone. And thank you once again to Katya for having me.